This is the Unstoppable Authors Podcast with worldbuilding warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable. Hello and welcome to episode 183 of the Unstoppable Authors Podcast. I'm your host, Holly Line, and with me today is Angela Ackerman, author of The Emotion Thesaurus and subsequent series, which you will most certainly have heard us rave about on this podcast in the past. It's a fantastic interview. Before we get into that, though, it's personal update time. I've been chipping away at the second edition of Goal Setting for Writers, but that's been quite slow, to be honest. I think the release of that will probably be pushed a bit later into the month. I had wanted to get it done before I go to London Book Fair on the 18th, but I have to be realistic. I've been spending far more time on my secret project that I alluded to in my last update. That's coming on nicely, and I'll be announcing it properly on my social media very soon, probably this week actually. So make sure you're following me on Instagram at HBLine for that announcement. And you'll like it, I promise. My other little side hustle has started to take on a life of its own and has been demanding much more of my time. I don't think I've mentioned it on here before, but I dabble in graphic design, and I've ended up taking on some paid work, as I've been doing some volunteer work for a local charity, and now I've ended up getting some paid gigs because of it. So I'm really enjoying that, and it's an extra stream of income, so I'm welcoming that, and we encourage that on this show as well. But yeah, it's taking up a lot of my time, and so there hasn't been as much time for writing. Which, you know, there are seasons for all things in life. These things happen. But yeah, if you would like a logo creating for your self-publishing imprint, perhaps, or maybe you have an event coming up, a book launch or something, and you would like a poster designing, get in touch with me for a quote and I'll see if I can help you. Again, Instagram is probably the best way to reach out. So I'm at HBLine on there. I have talked before on this podcast about being multi-passionate and how I wouldn't have it any other way, but it is extremely challenging to balance all of the plates. But as long as I am creating, be it writing fiction or playing music or designing, then I am a happy bunny, and that's the important thing, right? So we have no new patrons this week, but a huge thank you to all of our existing patrons who sponsor the show. We appreciate all of your support so very, very much. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the show. You can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. Once again, we are running our monthly session of Sprints and Giggles for all of our listeners. It's an evening on which we do writing sprints, answer questions, and have a laugh. This month, that will be happening on Wednesday the 26th of April at 8 p.m. UK time. If you'd like to join in, you just need to be subscribed to our newsletter or be a member of our Facebook group, so check out the show notes for those links. And now, on to the interview with Angela Ackerman. With me today is Angela Ackerman. Angela is a writing coach, international speaker, and co-author of the best-selling book, The Emotion Thesaurus, A Writer's Guide to Character Expression, and its many sequels. Available in 9 languages, her guides are sourced by US universities, recommended by agents and editors, and are used by novelists, screenwriters, and psychologists around the world. To date, this book collection has sold over 900,000 copies. Angela is also the co-founder of the popular site Writers Helping Writers, as well as One Stop for Writers, a portal to game-changing tools and resources that enable writers to craft powerful fiction. Hello, Angela, and welcome to Unstoppable Authors.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. Could you get us started by telling us a bit about your writing journey?
Sure thing. So I definitely, I went the scenic route because I ended up somewhere that I didn't expect. Like most writers, I started in a genre that I was really comfortable in, which was children's fiction. So I wrote a lot of chapter books and middle grade and things like that. And at a certain point in time, you know, I was pretty sure that, okay, my writing's pretty good, just needs like a little bit of a polish. And then, you know, there, you know, I'll be able to publish everything and life will be great. You know, that crazy dream that we all have. And so I joined a critique group and I learned very quickly that I had a lot to learn, which is also very common. So yeah, no, that was a really good head check to join a critique group and really get a sense of where my writing was and where it needed to be. At that critique group, though, I learned a ton, so much about writing and about myself, but also I met Becca Puglisi there, who's my co-author. And this is where things start going off the track a little bit, because, you know, at that point in time, I was very focused on being a children's author. And Becca and I just really gelled, really loved each other's writing. We both wrote children's fiction, but we also had this massive passion for helping other people. And we started to really explore writing craft together. We actually took a year off from writing completely to study writing craft and just really understand the fundamentals. We'd read the same book and then we'd discuss it. And so it was great because if one of us didn't understand something, the other person did. And from there, we just started thinking like, you know, how can we help writers? How can we pass on what we're learning ourselves? One of our big problematic areas was emotion. And so, you know, we found that our characters were always shrugging their shoulders or frowning or scowling. And so we thought, God, there's got to be a better way because it just seems so repetitive. And so we started building these lists of different emotions and how characters would express those things. And it kind of went crazy. We started sharing those lists. Writers, we realized, wow, like it's not just us who struggle with this. Everybody does. We ended up sharing those on a blog that we started together. And it just sort of went viral. Like every week people were tuning in and they were requesting different emotions for us to cover. We ended up creating a book out of it. And that sort of launched our journey into show, don't tell and description and just understanding different aspects of description that are really key to story that we may not think about as being so important, but really diving into them and understanding like show, don't tell, what is that really? And how can we use these different elements so that every word in our story is contributing and it earns the right to be there. And there's no fluffy description. It's just all powerful stuff that's pushing the story forward and creating characterization and things like that. And so, yeah, it led to a whole bunch of different writing guides that we've created over the years. And then we formed a website around them, One Stop for Writers, which has all of the thesauruses we've created because we've created a lot more than we have in book form. And so they're kind of all housed there together. And then there are a lot of other tools there too. So we're just kind of continuing our journey to help writers. So, yeah.
Wonderful. We don't use the video on this podcast, unfortunately, but I'm sure you can see all your books. Nice little stack of the thesauruses there behind me, within easy reach when I need them. They're absolutely invaluable. And I think so many writers have those like crutches, don't they, for, you know, expressions and gestures that characters do all the time. And I know a lot of my characters in my earlier books swallow hard lumps in their throat an awful lot. So yeah,
mine was frowning. I started counting them and then I challenged myself, you're only allowed to use frowns twice in the whole manuscript.
Oh wow,
that was hard, but I did it.
Okay, so we want to add some variety into how our characters express themselves. So what are the foundations for creating realistic emotions in our characters?
The first thing I would say is you really have to understand your character at a deep level. You have to really understand who they are underneath the surface, because every single person will express emotion differently. You and I would express emotion differently, even in the same situation, even if we felt the same thing. Mm. You know, if we were both felt fear, chances are the way we're going to express it is going to be different based on who we are, our personality, maybe emotional sensitivities that we have, you know, things that happened to us in our past can make us more sensitive to certain emotions, and it'll be the same for our character. So kind of understanding their backstory, their emotional wounds and things like that, things that might be triggering for them or bring certain emotions close to the surface. And then what does that look like when they are really reactive? Understanding how personality traits will factor in, you know, characters who are a little bit more reserved versus like demonstrative, like that's going to look different. Their actions will be different. Their dialogue will be different. Comfort zone is another one. Like us, you know, we have to feel like we're safe to show emotion. And I think it's very common for most people to actually hide emotion. We don't tend to be forthright about what we're feeling unless we feel very, very safe. So that means on the page, we have to understand, you know, I want my character to I want to show this emotion. How can I do that in a way that readers will pick up on, but it's authentic to who they are and the fact that they do tend to hide their emotions? How can I describe those hidden emotions in a way that readers will be able to connect the dots? Mm. So it's kind of understanding all of that. I would also say it's really important for us to connect the dots for readers. A lot of times we get so close to our characters and we're so present in the moment as authors that we know exactly why they feel the thing that they feel, but we're not necessarily connecting the dots for readers. We need to make sure that we're showing the cause and not just the effect. Mm. So that's one thing that I sometimes see. There's not enough time spent on what's actually triggering the character. You know, if some guy walks in the room and all of a sudden our character's angry and their thoughts are angry and stuff like that, we need to know why. Like, why did that guy, you know, cause that sort of reaction? And, you know, that's where you need a little bit of information, where maybe that was her ex and now he's got a new girl on his arm or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so if she walks up to him and she just like slaps him across the face or something, then it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess we understand why she was upset. But, you know, so just understanding that sort of reaction is really important. Mm-hmm. And then I would say too, to think about true to life, how we really express emotion ourselves. We want to have a good mix of different ways to express emotions, but thinking about what we ourselves do can be a really helpful way for us to have a kind of a think about, you know, what would feel natural for my character. You know, what emotions would they feel? Mm-hmm. What blend of emotions they feel? Because that's kind of the other thing, is that emotions never show up alone. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be one thing that they feel, but then that always leads to other emotions. And so we have to make sure that we're taking readers along that journey and showing them, you know, maybe sometimes conflicting emotions that a character might feel. You can buy a brand new car and be so excited and you know, thinking about how you're going to, you know, take it home and you're going to show your friend, take him for a ride, and it's going to be great. And then all of a sudden you almost get into a car accident, and then your heart is pounding and you're thinking about, oh my gosh, like if something happened to this car, I wouldn't be able to afford to fix it. You know, did I overextend myself? Should I have bought this car? And like your brain kind of goes down this whole pathway of different emotions. And so in storytelling, we want to make sure that we're doing that too, so that readers can always follow along.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me as well, one of the things I try to get with my characters is to keep each character internally consistent. So if they react a certain way to a certain emotion, there's going to be some consistency throughout the story arc. And so it's finding creative ways to show that without being repetitive that I think is quite a challenge. So I know I didn't prepare you for this question, but are there any words of advice on achieving that?
Yeah, I mean, I think every every character is going to have certain ticks and tells. And these can be really helpful, especially for showing those hidden emotions where your character, basically your character, we're always thinking in real life, we're always thinking, okay, I feel X, but do I want other people to know that I feel that? And our character is going to be the same way in the story. You know, maybe they are worried about being judged. Maybe they're worried about being perceived as weak or someone using their emotions against them. So there's this tendency to sort of hide emotions. So one really effective way to sort of show that can be something like a tick or a tell. Mm-hmm. And this is just something that your character does that you do need to set up early on in the story, but you want to tie it to something that really matters. So you don't want to do this for every single emotion, but if there's one specific emotion that maybe your character is really sensitive to, that's really hard for you to show, then you could use this tick or tell. And the technique would be where early on in the story, there's a really obvious situation that triggers a specific emotion. And so you show your character do that thing. I have a friend of mine, whenever I'm talking to her and she's about to bring something up that she's worried that I'm going to be upset about, or she's really nervous to bring it up, I notice she starts to clear her throat. She's just, she'll pause and she'll clear her throat and she'll clear her throat. And I always know, okay, when this happens, I need to like not react, because it's important. Like, she's bothered by this. Like, this is hard for her to say. I need to listen and not react. So it's kind of good that I've picked up on her tell. I've never told her that I know her tell or anything like that. But that's what we want to do in storytelling is, you know, if there is especially something difficult for our character, show them do something tied to that. And then whenever that specific emotion is close to the surface throughout the story, you can show that tell and it reminds readers, oh, right, that's what's going on here. You just wouldn't want to overuse it. You know, you don't want to give them ticks and tells for every single emotion. What we really want to do with emotion is show our characters and how they act and behave. We want to show them making choices and decisions, because that's what gives them agency. Mm-hmm. And emotion is the heart of those choices and decisions. You know, your character feels something, they make a decision, they make a choice, and they act on it. And so we want to focus on that. But ticks and tells definitely do have their place and can be used.
Mm. Okay. So how else can writers evoke the many varied emotions that they're going to portray on the page? What are they, the literary devices that we can use?
The nice thing is there's tons. So one of the vehicles that I really recommend people use is thinking about body language and expressions. So these are the physical presentations of what your character is feeling. Obviously expressions, I think we all know, you know, your character's eyes widen, or they smile, or they scowl. The thing about facial expressions that we need to remember is that the face is only so big. And so that can get really repetitive. If all we do are describing how our characters look in the face, then it's kind of boring on the page. And this is something where we have to think about differently from real life, because when you're talking to someone in the real world, you're focused on their face. You're looking for micro expressions to see how they're responding to the things that you're saying, so that you're reading their emotions. But that doesn't translate as well on the page. So expressions are important, but I always encourage people to think down, like look down and think about what the rest of your character's body is doing. For example, what is their posture like? Is there tension in their body, visible tension or not, that might indicate the emotion that they're feeling? What is their personal space like, you know, between them and other characters? Are they in someone's face? Are they backing away? Are they keeping that safety barrier, their personal comfort zone? What are their feet doing? What are their hands doing? Are they in their pockets? Are they fiddling with jewelry because they're nervous? Like, there's lots of things that people do with their hands in when they're feeling different emotions. Maybe they're holding something as a shield. So there's all these different physical ways that we can show our characters either taking up a lot of space, trying to make themselves small, you know, is their posture kind of collapsed, or is it wide open and confident? There's a lot of things that can help readers understand who our characters are and what they're feeling in that moment. Mm-hmm. So body language and expression are definitely two of the big ones. I would also say visceral sensations are very, very powerful. These are the internal sensations and responses that we have to emotion that we don't have control over. They just happen. And visceral sensations tend to come on when emotion is quite strong. It's like that instant, immediate thing that happens in the body. So a shot of adrenaline, you know, your character suddenly feels fear. And adrenaline shoots through their body, and then all of a sudden their heart is racing, and, you know, maybe their breath is coming fast and things like that. These things the character won't have control over until they think about what's going on and they physically and mentally go, okay, I need to calm down. So it's like that fight or flight sort of thing that happens within the body, and different emotions might trigger different things. Dread, there might be this sudden like heaviness inside the body and inside the core, or the chest might grow tight if you're feeling anxiety and things like that. Mm-hmm. So these visceral sensations can be a really great way to show your character's emotions, because they're common to all people. So if you write it in the right way, your reader's going to recognize it. They're going to recognize that the character is feeling a strong emotion right at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing with visceral reactions to remember is that they are internal. So you need to be in the character's point of view in order to describe them, unless they have some sort of outward factor to them. So, for example, if your character is upset and we're in their point of view, I could describe, you know, how the character's throat feels like it's closing up, and there's that hard lump because the tears are coming on. I can describe, you know, how their eyes are starting to tingle because their tears are welling up. If I'm outside of that character, if the point of view character is another character or omniscient or whatever, then I can describe tears running down the character's face, because it has this outward presentation to it. Same thing with like body tension, right? You can describe that internally, how your character is like very, you know, they're very tense. Maybe their fingernails are biting into their palms because they're so tense. But I could also describe that from another character's point of view. They could see the cords in the neck sticking out. So some visceral sensations do have that outward component, but for the most part, you want to make sure that you're in the character's point of view. Mm. Another one is dialogue. Dialogue is fantastic for showing emotion, but we need to remember that it needs to mimic real life. In real life, we don't tend to talk about how we feel directly. We don't. Unless you feel very, very, very comfortable with someone, you're not just going to like vomit out like every feeling that you have. You know, instead, people, you know, they show what they're feeling, say discomfort, by different things that they'll do in dialogue. Maybe they'll misdirect the conversation. If somebody's asking them questions and they're starting to be worried that they're going to give something away that they shouldn't, maybe they know something and someone has asked them to keep a secret, and somebody keeps asking them questions about it, you know, they're going to try to misdirect. They're going to try to shift the conversation to another topic. You know, they might become reactive. They might go on the offensive, that fight or flight, that fight aspect. You know, they might get angry. They might start asking pointed questions themselves. They might get defensive. So there's lots of ways that you can show emotion through the words that your character uses. And even the sentence structure, like how long the sentence is, how short it is, things like that. Dialogue cues are another one. So the things that go with dialogue is, you know, all the different things that somebody will do when their emotions are activated. So the pitch of their voice might change. Maybe it gets higher and higher, or it gets lower and more threatening. You know, our characters might interrupt themselves to give themselves time to think when they're telling a lie. You know, they're telling someone something, but they're trying to keep up with their brain, and they're thinking in their brain, okay, I have to say something here, but I can't tell them that. What can I tell them? And so you can kind of show them kind of interrupt themselves or do ums or whatever. It just has to be natural. It can't be overdone. If it's overdone, then it just doesn't work. But things like this are techniques that we can definitely use in dialogue. Mm-hmm. Thoughts are another way that we can show our character's emotions. When a character is feeling emotion, thoughts tend to run on a very specific tangent. So, for example, if your character was really worried or anxious, maybe they're at a food court, a friend is supposed to meet them, friend doesn't show up. And so they're watching, looking at their watch, they're, you know, looking at the different entrances, trying to figure out where they are, like, why haven't they shown up? What's going on? You know, did they change their mind about coming? You know, did something happen? Are they in a car accident? So the more anxious you get, or the more worried you get, that's where our brains go in the real world. You start jumping logic and thinking about the worst case scenario. So you can show your character doing that in their thoughts. Again, it's definitely, you know, point of view. If you're showing your character's thoughts, you need to be in their point of view. We want to show and not tell too. And what I mean by that is we don't think about, you know, oh, I hate her. We instead think things like, oh, you know, that bitch is going to pay, right? Like that's a more showing way to show, you know, what your character is thinking than telling. Mm-hmm. So bots are really great for providing some context to sort of show readers why your character is feeling a certain emotion. You know, if they feel betrayed by someone, you can kind of elaborate a little bit with thought. But you really want to focus on that outer things that are happening. And then finally, their actions. We talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, emotions prompt decisions and choices, and that prompts actions. So we want to show our characters do things. That's what pushes the story forward. That's what gives them agency. But we need to think about the root emotion that's causing them to act and behave in certain ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about dialogue is, what isn't said usually says so much more than what is said.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a friend on Instagram who is absolutely obsessed with the Pride and Prejudice movie. And she shares clips over and over again of the infamous hand flex. So after Darcy sees Elizabeth into the carriage, he walks away and he kind of stretches his hand, because it's that, obviously, because it's period romance, there was so much that wasn't allowed, and so, you know, that just a touch of the hand was so significant, and the way he flexes his hand, and it's become this big sort of like cult thing, like the hand flex. People know what that means, people who are fans of the movie, and it's a split second on the screen, and it was improvised as well, apparently. So
I love that it's improvised. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. What you don't say, because the other thing that happens in dialogue specifically is we're always thinking about the other person that you're talking to, and, you know, what they're feeling and what's safe to share and what isn't. Like I said, you know, when it comes to emotion, we're always thinking about, you know, are they going to take this wrong? Are they going to judge me for what I feel? You know, could this be used against me? These are all things that just tie into our instinctual response to stay safe, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we are, is we're always looking for ways to be safe. And so our characters are going to feel that in the story. Depending on who they're talking to, that dialogue is going to look completely different when it comes to emotion. Mm-hmm. So knowing who that other character is and understanding that relationship is also going to guide writers to what that dialogue should look like.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned show, don't tell, and obviously we've all heard that phrase before, but what does it mean in practical terms?
Well, the very simple, easy show, don't tell definition is just that show is something that draws readers in, whereas telling informs. It's more factual. It's just the facts. And so, you know, there's a real... The phrase is either show, don't tell, or show, not tell. And there's a lot of people that sort of get their back up because they say, you know, look, you can't show everything. You have to tell sometimes. Telling is okay. And that is all true, 100% true. But the spirit of show, don't tell is a reminder to assess what you're writing and to ask yourself what's really important in this scene or in this moment. And then what should you show versus what isn't important? And you don't need to really describe it. I think writers, they, you know, at the start, they think about, okay, well, my character's in this scene. I need to describe the scene so readers can imagine it. That's true. That's kind of level one. But level two is with show don't tell, what details matter in that scene? What details are hints at subtext or how the character is feeling or hints at what could go wrong or, you know, how can these details provide mood or foreshadow and things like that. And so it's thinking about details that really matter in a moment. You know, what can we describe about a location that tells us something about the character, especially if they're in a situation that's personal to them? This is an awesome opportunity to reveal a little bit about who they are by what you choose to describe and what you don't. If I described a character's bedroom, I could just describe it as, oh yeah, it was, you know, it was really messy and the closet was a mess and, you know, whatever. They were hunting around their desk trying to find something and couldn't. And if that doesn't really have any bearing on the story or the character in any way, it's empty description. But if the character had a trait of irresponsibility or something like that, then those details matter because now I'm tying these things to who that character really is. They are disorganized. They maybe are irresponsible, and this room is a reflection of that. Mm-hmm. And so we want to be thinking about that. You know, how can the details that we use show the readers a deeper side of the scene and help them either see, you know, a little bit more into who a character is, what they're feeling, how can the scene amplify certain emotions and things like that. So that's really what show don't tell is the spirit is just recognizing which details are important enough to slow down a bit and describe in detail, but challenge ourselves to know why we're describing those particular details.
Mm. Yeah. What mistakes do you see authors making, maybe in relation to show don't tell or other aspects?
Well, with show don't tell, I think one thing that you do see is that some people feel like, well, I'm just going to tell this because it's really hard to show, so I'm just going to tell it, and that can happen with emotions, you know. One thing that everyone should do with their writing is look for when you name an emotion, because almost always you're telling it instead of showing it. And so it can be a really great way to sort of find the spots where you're like, oh, I need to work a little harder on this part and think about how I can show that emotion. Because when you show an emotion effectively, you shouldn't need to name the emotion. Now, it doesn't mean that you will never name an emotion. You know, I don't like talking in absolutes. There are some times where, you know, a named emotion is needed. And there's some times where you're not going to get into this big in-depth description of what the character is feeling because the scene is wrong for it. An example of that is if you had a high intensity scene, you got your character running through the woods and there's an axe murderer behind them. You know, you're not going to take that moment as an author and unspool their emotions too much. You're more going to focus on the interaction of them and the scenes and heighten the feeling in that way. Two, you know, if emotion goes on too long, that's another time where you need to just shorten and tighten things up. If the intensity of the scene goes on too long, then it can feel melodramatic. So we need to have a good read on that. As far as other show don't tell mistakes is trying to show everything. Like I said, we can't show everything. We can get maybe a little too enthusiastic in certain areas that we're really into. And I think that's something we need to watch out for is if we absolutely like are nutty about world building and we are so excited about the world we've created and all these cool, neat things that happen in it. And we can't wait to show, you know, the readers everything. We need to take a step back and go, do they need to know that right now in this scene? Probably not. But these things, yes, they do need to know. So we want to give readers enough to navigate the scenes. We want to make them feel involved in the scenes, but we don't want to show them everything.
Mm.
So yeah, those would be some of the things that I would definitely say are issues with show don't tell.
Mm. Yeah. So it's about discerning, isn't it? Discerning what details to share in what moment and like zooming in on the important details.
Yeah. And that's actually one way to do that is to use the sense of touch, because touch is intimate and it's really good at directing the reader's attention to something important. In real life, we don't just go around and touch a bunch of stuff. Like, we don't, right? We touch things that are important, meaningful, that there's a purpose for doing that. So when you describe texture, you're slowing the moment down, but you're describing something that your character's interacting with. And so that's where you need to ask that question. Why is this important? Like, what can I do with this object? Or why would they, you know, why do I need to describe this? You know, if a character is about to have like a very deep, meaningful conversation with someone and you show them they're in a park, there's a park bench, and then they go to sit on it, you know, and so you're describing the wood plank underneath their hand as they boost themselves up onto it. That pulls readers into that moment. They are now there with that character. You know, they're grounded in the scene by that feeling that you just described of their hands, you know, on that wood and how rough it is. And, you know, maybe there's paint chips that come off or they get a splinter or something like that. But whatever you're describing, like it is a really great way to sort of anchor them in the scene. But just make sure that it's meaningful. Like I said, don't have them touching random things for no reason, unless you're trying to show that they're really nervous and fidgeting and things like that. If there's a reason for it, great. If there isn't, then focus on what's meaningful in this scene when it comes to touch.
Okay. All right. So speaking of scenes, we all know that conflict is the heart of story, and you know, in any given scene, you're going to need some sort of conflict, not like big fights in every scene or anything, but some sort of conflict, be it internal or between two characters. So how do we create compelling conflicts? There's a lot of C's in that sentence for our characters.
I would say to, first of all, have a really good understanding of where the plot's going, but also understanding the character arc, because this is conflict is that bridge. We call it like the golden thread, because it joins plot and character together. You're going to have conflict happen that it influences the plot of the story. It slows the character down. It creates hurdles, problems that they have to solve to get to their goal. But really good conflict, meaningful conflict, also does something on the inside. If our character has an arc, then who they are at the start of the story and who they are at the end of the story are kind of like bookends. They have to grow and evolve and change in some way in order to achieve what they want, because who they are at the start of the story is someone who's incapable of getting that thing. If they could just go and magically wave a wand and they have it, we don't have a story. So it needs to be hard. They need to do something, they need to change the way they do things. They need to open their mind more. They need to try something new. And they need to figure out what internally is kind of holding them back. Mm-hmm. And so great conflict not only, you know, works for the plot and pushes the story forward and creates these problems that are needed to progress the story, but it also creates that inner reflection where it's doing something internally with the character. Maybe there's a situation where our character is the kind of guy, like, he's super independent, never asks for help, doesn't trust people. You know, he does everything. He's the lone wolf. But his arc in the story is that he can't be a lone wolf all the time, that he has to sometimes, you know, be vulnerable enough to let people get close and help him. And that's the lesson that he needs to learn in the story. But like, he's not about that lesson at all. Thank you very much. I'm a lone wolf. So there's going to be problems and stuff that happens in the story that's going to continually challenge him, that's going to continually put his back up against the wall, where it's like, dude, if you just reached out to somebody, this would be way easier. But there should be moments where they're challenged on that. Internally, I'm in over my head. I really want this thing, but to have this thing, I need to admit that I can't do this myself. That's a big moment that needs to happen in that story. And so you can create conflict that does that, that challenges that. And it could be for the earlier part of the story, you know, your character does push forward and do it on their own, but there's a cost to doing that. And then they just get to a point in time where the stakes are so high and the room for error is so minute that they have to admit, like, I can't do this alone. If I really want that thing, I need to ask for help. And then, you know, you've got this like, oh, moment where the character arc and the plot and everything works together. So, so that's, we're looking for stuff like that, not just creating conflict that slows our character down on the path to their goal. That's where it's just kind of looking at the plot aspect of it. We want to challenge our characters in different ways. We want conflict to be kind of a training ground for them to, you know, learn how to adapt and do things in a new way, and move past things that are maybe holding them back, like fears and things like that.
You just described the character arc of my current protagonist in my current work in progress.
Well, there you go, that's right?
That's nice tips.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Okay. So you have a range of thesauruses. Thesauri, what's the official
book? You know what? It's both. It's thesauri or thesauruses. So it's like totally up to you.
Awesome. Okay. But you have several on setting, and as I write urban fantasy, I permanently have the urban setting book, near my desk where I can quickly grab details from it. So how can writers bring their setting to life and integrate it into the story?
Well, definitely think about different sensory, like bringing in all the senses or bringing in more than just what you see. I think as writers, we tend to focus on what we're trying to describe, what the character sees. But like I said, you know, those other senses can be really powerful to pulling readers into that moment, especially, like I said, something like touch. And another one is actually the sense of smell. The sense of smell is most tied to human memory. So if you want to pull reader into the scene, you know, think about a smell tied to that scene that might remind them of a time where they experienced that, or they were in a similar setting and things like that. So obviously, like an easy one is if you're in a character or if you're in a bakery, you know, you would, the smell of yeast, fresh baked bread. I mean, that just like puts you right there and you're thinking, oh my God, I want a donut now. I should have used that as a, okay. Anyway, I digress, but. So sensory detail is really great when it's naturally flowing with what's happening, the action in the story, balancing your setting description with what's happening. We can't, like I said, we can't get into this thing where we're describing stuff so much that the action is stopped. So that's one thing that we want to do. The other big one with setting is to really think carefully about where a scene takes place. Sometimes we sort of just like, a first idea hits us like, oh, you know, this meeting is going to take place in the food court, my example from earlier. But maybe that's not the best place for what's going to happen. You know, I've set up that she's really anxious that her friend hasn't shown up. Maybe there's a reason for that anxiety. Like maybe her friend is going to make a decision about something really important that's going to impact our character. And so that's why she's really anxious for her to show up, and she's freaked out when she doesn't show up right away. Is a food court the best place for that conversation to happen? Is there somewhere else, depending on what they're going to talk about and maybe what the outcome is, maybe her friend has bad news. Is there somewhere else that I could have that scene that it's going to act like a tuning fork for like the character's emotions? Maybe there's inherent dangers or threats in that particular location. Like there's a lot of things that settings can do when we think about what's going to happen in the scene and what is like the best or worst place for that scene to take place. So sort of thinking in those terms, like what's going to influence my character's emotions? Where could this take place where it's going to put them off balance? I think an example that I use in one of the setting books is a character who is really excited about this job that he's going to interview for. And he knows he's got it. Like he's confident. He knows he's the best candidate for the job. And the CEO of the company really wants to wow him. And so suggests, well, why don't we do this meeting, not in an office, let's do it over lunch. And so our character's like, yeah, let's do that. And the guy picks the very same restaurant where a year earlier, he proposed to his girlfriend and she shot him down. Yeah. So now he's going into that restaurant with all that emotional baggage. he was here a year ago and he was shot down. So what is that going to do to his confidence level? You know, and so, you know, it's probably going to, he's going to be distracted during that meeting. You know, he's going to notice certain things that he's maybe two tables away from where he was sitting that night. And now there's a couple sitting at that same table and they're holding hands and she's got a wedding ring and it's everything he wanted. And all that crap is now in his head for this job interview. So there's ways where we can use the setting to kind of, you know, offset our character, you know, make them struggle a little bit more. There can be inherent dangers and threats, like I said, with a particular setting. You can use the weather in certain settings. You know, weather is a great amplifier for emotion and building mood and stuff like that. Think about whether it happens at day or night. I mean, that alone can just totally transform a setting. And yeah, can do a lot for it. So yeah, I could write a book on this. I love setting. Setting is awesome.
I'm very intuitive. So I do a lot of things without really consciously planning it. And I was just realizing that in two of my books, they're a duology. And in the first one, I have my main character go on a first date with a very dangerous figure. And it's nighttime and they go to this like park for like an outdoor cinema screening thing. And then in the second book, another character meets her at the same park during the day to warn her about her, how dangerous this guy is. And it's I didn't do it on purpose, but it's, yeah, there's sort of the opposite.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. And I think like that's an important thing to talk about is that there's a lot of stuff that goes on inside that gray matter that we're not real sure, like how that magic works. And we don't look too closely, but we just know like stuff happens back there and it's awesome. And I think that, you know, there is a lot of stuff that just, we make connections unconsciously. And so when I say, you know, you think about a setting and you just usually go with the first thing, the first idea that comes, sometimes that first idea is the best one. But just challenge yourself on it a little bit and ask yourself, like, is there a better place for what's going to happen? Or can I add something to this particular scene that changes it? That, you know, like I said, it's nighttime instead of daytime, or, you know, there's someone there that's quite dangerous, or there's some sort of event like a protest or something that is different that adds another level to this scene. But yeah, I mean, our gut instinct, I think, is pretty strong. The more you write, the more you read too, you just stuff piles up back there and really great things can come out in those first drafts.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So at One Stop for Writers, you have a whole host of tools. I'd love to hear about what some of them are and how authors can use them.
Yeah, so One Stop for Writers, as I mentioned earlier on, Beck and I, we love thinking about how can we help writers in ways that they're not being helped now, or how can we help writers in a way that it's easier? And that's why we created the Thesaurus books, because they're part writing how-to guide, all this stuff that we've been talking about, setting or emotions, it's all kind of in there. But then there's lists where it's brainstorming lists to actually help you figure out what it is you want to describe. And we're aware of the different types of tools that are out there. And we're like, there's got to be a better way to do some of these things. So we created One Stop for Writers. First of all, to put all of our thesauruses in one place, because we've written so many different thesauruses over the years, and not all of them are books. I think we have 10 books and we're up to 18 or 19 different thesauruses. So there's ones at One Stop for Writers that there is no book for, like one on character and motivation. So looking at what your character wants and why, what could be at stake, what could stand in your character's way, how do they have to prepare in order to be able to be successful and achieve that goal. Basically, everything you need to plot a story is in that one little thesaurus that's at One Stop for Writers. And then there's other ones like weather and theme and symbolism, different aspects of storytelling that are really important. And they're all in that single database. So that's kind of the heart of One Stop for Writers. But there's also other tools that use these different thesauruses or make different aspects of brainstorming a story or writing a story or revising a story easier. One of them is a character builder tool where we've hooked it up to all the thesaurus databases that center around character. So emotions, emotional wounds, positive traits, negative traits, character motivation, basically everything that we have at that site, all the different thesauruses we've created to do with character. And so you can build a character, look at their backstory, their personality, their behavior, their daily life, and pull information straight from the thesaurus. So if you're brainstorming your character's emotional wound, it prompts you with questions and details to help you fill that out and think about, okay, what is my character's emotional wound? And then it connects the dots to you, for you, to what type of fears would your character most likely have based on this emotional wound? What would their behavior be like based on this emotional wound? What personality traits are often tied to people that have this emotional wound? And so you start in one place. It might be emotional wounds. It might be your character's talent or skill. It might be their personality, wherever you want to start. But it always leads you to other details based on this giant database about characterization. And so it's very easy to build characters that are really deep and layered. And you'll know the iconic pieces that you need to know, like what it is that they want in the story and what's motivating them, that internal, you know, motivation, that hard piece to understand. Mm-hmm. And it will ask you questions where you choose what is primary, like their primary character flaw, their primary fear, things like that. And the reason why it asks you for primary things is the tool is smart enough to know that those things will be part of character arc. And it will actually compile a character arc blueprint for you of your character. And based on all the information you gave it, this is their character arc in the story. So it will tell you exactly what's going on underneath the surface, what the character wants, why, what they have to overcome in order to get that thing. And if you want to see, like, what would that journey look like if my character fails, you can just flick a toggle and it'll write that character arc, but tell you what it looks like if your character fails. That they fail to overcome their fatal flaw, that they can't get past their own personal fears, and so they fail. And so this is good for your protagonist, it's good for your antagonist, it's good for side characters, it's good for characters who don't have an arc. You don't have to do the arc part of it if you're just brainstorming a side character, but it really helps you go deeper, because if there's one theme to writing, it's that the better you know your character, the stronger your story will be. Mm-hmm. Because it's where, you know, like you say, you had this bookend and you didn't even know it, where you had this one scene where they went on this date and then this other scene where she's being warned against him. And the more we understand about our characters, the more we can make that synchronicity happen in our story, and the more everything will make sense. Like, we're going to be picking conflict scenarios that match our character's personal inner journey. They're not just random things that happen that are going to slow the character down. They're meaningful because we know what's going on inside the character. And so we're choosing the right conflict, or we're choosing the right settings for different scenes and stuff like that, because we understand the impact on that character. So that's just one tool that we have there. We've got ones that help with plotting. One of the best things that I like about One Stopper Writers is one thing that's really hard for people is the whole process of planning, writing, and revising a book. Like, it's a lot to juggle and there's so many pieces to it. And so Beck and I created a storyteller's roadmap that leads you through everything, brainstorming, writing, and revising. And so no matter where you are in the process, you can get help if you get stuck. As we write, there's a lot of things that slow us down. You know, if we don't know our characters well enough and we start having all these problems, it gives you guidance on what to do and how to dig deeper and how to go back and that sort of thing. You know, different mm-hmm. things can hold us back, like writer's block or having too many ideas. And so whatever the problem is, we've taken the most common writer's problems that tend to plague someone as they're writing or revising, and we've answered them and we give you guidance as to what to do. So it's like having a story coach kind of near your keyboard, which can be really helpful for some people.
Mm. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, just things like that. There is a free trial, so if anyone wants to give it a try, please do. We actually just added a new thesaurus to the site too on character fears. So for understanding what your character's biggest fear is, how that's going to affect their behavior in the story, how it's going to hold them back and be part of character arc, that's a really good thesaurus to look at.
That's my jam. I like character fears, so I might have to go and have a look at that.
We're awesome. Just so mean, aren't we?
Like, well, it wouldn't be fun if we didn't torture them a little bit.
You gotta poke those soft spots. I have to tell you, I was listening to one of your episodes, the one where you were talking about killing off characters, and I have to say you guys really got into that.
Yeah, we did.
Like, I was a little worried for you. Like, wow, they are really enjoying this topic.
Yeah. Well, only Angeline and I. Julia is not a fan of the killing. She shies away, so we had to cover that topic without her. But yeah.
That's funny.
So we collaborate here at Unstoppable Authors, and you collaborate with Becca Puglisi. You've been collaboration partners for a long time. What are your top tips for writers who want to collaborate with another writer, be it in fiction or for an author-to-author business?
Well, they kind of go together, because if you're going to write a story, then unless you're just doing it as a hobby or for fun, then you have a purpose and you know that you'll publish it. And that means you're in business with somebody. So that's kind of the important thing to think about right from the get-go is, do you see like a, if you are intending to do something with that story, like, is this someone that you're cool with all of that side of it, that business end of it, and, you know, trust and all that kind of stuff. So I would say some of the things that you want to think about when you're looking to collaborate with someone is first really understanding what each person wants to get out of that collaboration and making sure you're on the same page. So for example, if you and I wanted to collaborate on a story and I really wanted to publish it, but you didn't, that's kind of like a huge issue that hopefully we would figure out at the start and not at the end when it's done. And you're like, okay, well, let's just put it in a drawer. And I'm like, no, let's not. So there's that. There's the trust issue. There's communication. Communication is huge. You have to be able to communicate well, be responsive. Definitely communication. Understanding the other person and their methods, whether it's storytelling, business, any of those things, like just really understanding how they operate, what's their work ethic, things like that. You know, you want to get a really good sense of that before you put a bunch of time and energy into a collaboration. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those would be some of the things that I would say. You just really need to be on the same page as much as possible so that there's no surprises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would echo all of that. Having a shared goal, I think, is important.
Yeah, for sure. And things change. Like, you know, you have to be flexible. Like, that's probably the other thing that makes a collaboration work is that people are at different stages in life. With Beck and I, for example, when we were building, our following at our blog, Beck actually took a couple of years off. So it was me there because she had kids, you know, at a different time than I did. So my kids were older. I'd done that. She was having babies. She's like, I can't. And I'm like, I get it. So, you know, like there has to be that flexibility where sometimes your time is, you don't have as much time or you've got other stuff on your plate. And so that has to be okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So finally, where can our listeners find out more?
I am on a lot of social media, probably too much. So you can search up my name on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and you'll find me. But probably the places that I would steer people to the most would be, first of all, writershelpingwriters.net. And that's our website and blog. Beck and I have been running that for a very long time. I don't want to say how long because it makes me sound really old, but it's been a very long time. And so there's just a ton of content there, lots and lots and lots on show, don't tell, emotion, basically any sort of struggle that you might have about writing, there's probably an article on it or tools or handouts or something like that. So it's a really good place to go if you need help with anything. And then One Stop for Writers, of course, if you want a little bit help beyond what we do in our books and you're kind of curious to see how else we can help writers and how we can make writing a little bit easier and teach you strong writing craft as you use the site, then do check out One Stop Writers. Like I said, that's there's a trial. So you can see all the thesauruses and use them. You can make one of everything. So one character profile, one story map, one timeline, all that kind of stuff. And that's at onestopwriters.com.
Okay, brilliant. Now, everyone who comes on Unstoppable Authors has to answer a would you rather question. So, Angela Ackerman, would you rather feel every emotion all of the time or have to rely on an AI to interpret other people's emotions for you?
Oh my God. Wow. That's a tough one, because on the first one, like, that's Angela's, you know, like in a straitjacket. And then the second one, I can function, but everything would be kind of hollow. Mm. I guess I would roll the dice with number one. Like, roll the dice with number one, baby.
Mm-hmm. And find ways to cope somehow.
Find ways to. I just have to move next to a liquor store. That's all. have like a hidden tunnel or something.
Yeah, some really, really good, like, emotional boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very, very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. It was good. Good to finally meet in person.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Angela. She had so many great tips to share. I will need to listen again with a notebook, that's for sure. Remember, if you want to join us for Sprints and Giggles, just sign up for our newsletter on our website or join our Facebook group, as that's where the link will be shared. If you'd like to go a step further and sponsor the show, you can do that at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And please don't forget to share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.